and welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast, where we watch a series of movies all in one day and then discuss them afterwards. My name is John, and we have a bunch of people joining us today. First and foremost, we have Alexei.
Hello, hello. Nice to be here.
And we got Josh.
I am the Dark Knight's Reckoning.
And we got Matthew.
That's me.
And we got Richard.
Hello there.
And in addition to that, we have other guests that may be popping in or out. There's a lot of people that wanted in on this podcast, and unfortunately, due to scheduling, you know, we couldn't get everybody in the room at the same time. So I'll announce people as they come and go into the podcast. But yeah, we'll have a couple extra special guests to come up later. But of course, this month, guys, it's the big month because we did all of the Batman movies. You guys don't sound that excited. It was Batman. Come on, it was awesome.
Woo! I'm Batman.
So yeah,
it was a fun marathon, actually.
It was great. So yeah, we've been pretty hyped for it for a while, and you know, we're hoping to do it.
Our most attended?
Oh yeah,
viewing
by far. I think.
I think most consistently attended. We had a lot of people for James Bond too, but they were all in and out.
Yeah.
But I think most people stayed for almost all the movies of this.
Yeah, and we had at least, like, what, 20 people in a room?
I think it was 22 at one point.
Yeah, at the end it was getting towards the mid-20s.
Yeah, pretty epic.
And then how many at the theater? Because that was even more.
That was, like, I think, like, over 20 or maybe under 30.
Basically rented out an IMAX theater.
Yeah,
just absolutely. For us.
So, you know, epic as ever. But I guess before we get into the movies, I don't know if you guys want to, you know, talk shop about just Batman and his significance, I suppose. He's quite a cultural, you know, icon.
Well, Batman's always been really significant for me, only because, you know, I grew up watching, obviously, the Tim Burton and even the Adam West Batman on TV Land. But when I was younger, like, the animated series is what really hooked me into Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that show's awesome.
I think that's pretty much, I don't know, for our generation, the defining Batman, like, in any rendition.
I think
animated series.
It's just one of the best TV shows ever made. Like, yeah. Animated, superhero, otherwise, yeah. Kids, adults. Like, it's simply one of my favorite TV shows that exists, period.
Yeah, and I mean, for me personally, I feel like Batman, of all any superheroes ever, Batman is, like, easily the best one. It just for me personally, like, he's my absolute favorite. And
fuck,
he's
that Superman bullshit.
Yeah.
Why do people? I've noticed Superman a real sucks. Backlash on Superman in the last, like, 5 years.
Because he sucks. Because he's a little bitch. He's an alien. It's not fair. He wears fucking undies on the outside.
I
he
think you're
stinks.
A fucking communist. Superman is America.
What?
Well, it's just not interesting. He's too untouchable.
And Batman's a detective at heart, and he's not a superhero. He's a vigilante. I mean, he doesn't have any powers. His powers comes from his detection and his gadgets and his, you know, financial backing. But you know, he's mortal. You know, he could die at any time. He could be killed.
He'll break somebody's ankles to get them to talk. Superman doesn't do that crap.
First of all, when did we become this cynical? Like, the world needs heroes. Like, what's wrong with having, like, a Batman and a Superman? Like, I think that's cool. I mean, what's wrong with, like, happy iconography, like, well, patriotism?
So Batman and Superman come up against the villain, and, you know, he's in a giant robot mech suit. He's like, Superman, why don't you take care of this guy? I'll beat him up once you get him out.
Yeah, why not? We need him. We need Superman. I need Superman.
Well, I agree with you. Like, the venomous hatred for Superman is probably a bit much. Like, you know,
basically started modern comics. It's not like he has anything to show for it. Like, what do you mean? He's awesome.
Does that pick up?
But to me, I think, and maybe this is just me, I don't know. But to me, Batman has an appeal that I think goes beyond any other superhero I've ever kind of known. Like I think Superman ranks fine amongst, you know, superheroes and their canon and all that. But I don't know. There's something about Batman. It just, he almost, like, transcends that stuff. And I mean, I obviously people know Superman as a pop culture icon as well, but maybe it's the dark side of me. I don't know. Maybe it's just Batman. He's more like brooding, and he's got, you know, his parents got killed, and he's got out for vengeance.
Superman's parents got killed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a whole planet blew up.
Yeah, a whole planet blew up.
Oh, so a whole planet of people's parents getting killed isn't bad? That's, like, a lot of parents getting killed.
Well, I don't think it's, you know, we have to have a competition in tragedies. I, I, I don't know.
Well, I'm not saying we should, but what I'm saying is, like, I feel like in the past 5 or 6 years, because of, like, the reality-based superhero movies we've received, where it's like, oh, it's so gritty, it's so real, it's so grounded, that, like, the comic book movies that, like, we all grew up on and care about, and, like, the actual idea of comics, like, is starting to wane a little bit. And I don't know if it's just out of cynicism or if it's just like, oh, it's not real enough, but I miss that stuff. Like when someone came up to me and said they were making an Aquaman movie and it was going to be goofy as shit and Aquaman's going to be rolling around with dolphins, I'd be like, yes, let's make that movie and have the Nolan universe too. Like,
I do want some sillier, more comic book movies.
Like Superman Returns.
Well, Marvel's delivering on all of those, though. You know, that's kind of Marvel has said, you know what, Batman, you can have this super dark, super serious shit. We're going to do the more goofy, colorful, flying dudes, aliens, space Vikings, etc., etc. And I think that it's pretty smart of them because, I don't know about you guys, but I stepped out of this marathon with some pretty intense Batman / super serious superhero fatigue. And I consider myself a huge Batman fan and a huge fan of all these movies for the most part. But man, I am ready to take a bat break after the second viewing of that.
See, that's weird because I missed the movie. Personally, like, I could have done it all over again, like, no problem. I don't know why. Like, Batman has, I'm like fatigueless with that guy. Like, I did the whole marathon and I got home and I was like wide awake. Like, and I would have probably watched another Batman movie if I could have.
I could have watched Dark Knight again.
Yeah, like,
Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. I could die never seeing those movies again and be happy, but. Hey.
Come on, man.
No,
on.
No.
We'll
but,
get into that.
But, you know, I watched the Tim Burton Batman's? What's the
Batman.
Plural?
Batman's, yeah. I think.
Batman films.
I watched those at least once a year. And so, like, I have virtually no notes for these movies just because I've seen them so many times that the dialogue is burned into my head, and I just never get tired of it.
We should probably delve in to the...
Yeah.
To the whole Batman.
Yeah, let's hurry through these first 8 movies so that we could all complain.
No. The first one, I plan on spending at least an hour or two dissecting the wonder that is, of course, our first movie in the marathon, which was Batman the Movie.
It was awesome.
Now, to clarify, the Adam West movie from 1966, you say Batman the movie, people might think you're talking about the original Tim Burton Batman movie. But no, this is the movie adaptation of the television show, which is fun. It was actually a great way to kind of start out.
Yeah, it's as far as like being entertained, which I think is sort of what I was talking about when I said like, oh, like not everything has to be gritty and real and cynical, like. I was almost most entertained by this, you know. It's in the top 3. Like, I had the most fun watching Batman the movie than most of the movies.
Oh, I think we might have a visitor.
A visitor? Let's see what what's at the door, Mr. Rogers?
You know, I skipped this Adam West Batman because I was so excited for the super serious ones at the end. I was like, you know what? I'm going to take this hour of sleep so that I'm awake for the Nolan Batmans at the end, and I thoroughly regret it because at the end I was just so out serious that I was like, man, I wish I had had that like silly Batman at the beginning.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's and I watch that show a lot. You know, I watch reruns of it a lot. So seeing like, you know, the really crazy Joker and Riddler and Burgess Meredith as the Penguin, who's still just so iconically funny and kooky as the Penguin, it was just a lot of fun. And Lee Merriweather's not my favorite Catwoman, but I think the scenes with all the villains together was fantastic. There's like two great moments, but one of my favorite moments is when they're in the submarine and they're being blasted, and they're all huddled together like as if like they're freezing to death for warmth. They're all huddled together at the periscope like wondering if they're gonna die, and it's such a funny, cute almost scene of them together.
Richard, I hate to interrupt you, but we have a pop in here to the marathon. We have returning to Cinemarathon, my brother Dan. Hey, Dan.
I'm limping in. I'm limping in from retirement. Coming in.
Your back was broken. And
I'm flying in. I was not there for the marathon, though, so I don't know if that's...
You just crawled across ice into
Gotham.
My back unimpregnable
was
city.
It was about 6 months ago. It took me this long to get here.
Yeah.
So to catch up, Dan, we actually just started. We're talking about the original Adam West Batman movie.
No, go for it. I only saw a couple of the movies recently, so I'll only kind of chime in during those because I wasn't there for the other ones.
Gotcha. Well, we'll regale you with tales of dehydrated UN members and whatnot.
Bat shark repellent.
Yeah. Oh, that was so ridiculous.
So like, amazing.
Yeah, like right near the top of the movie, a shark just jumps out at Batman and grabs his leg while he's on a helicopter.
Yeah, like on the ladder hanging underneath the helicopter.
Yeah, and Alexei, how did he get out of that one?
Bat shark repellent?
Quick, Robin, that's throw great. Me the bat shark repellent.
Yes.
They only had a few different types of repellent.
In their helicopter.
Yeah, in the helicopter they had bat shark repellent, bat barracuda repellent. Bat manta ray repellent.
You gotta be prepared, you know? It's...
But only for four specific animals.
Those mantas are deadly.
Yeah.
So Black does he, manta. When he was heading to the ocean, did he just like grab all that stuff off the bat shelf, his heavily organized repellent shelf? And
I don't think there's any grabbing going on in this movie. Yeah. It's just there. It's just convenient. Whatever is good for the joke.
He's got everything planted everywhere. As we established when we were watching this, about every three blocks, he's got a bat cycle just hidden in the bushes.
I actually think one of the things that's kind of fun about the whole Adam West Batman is it, I used to think it was just kind of dumb, but watching it as an adult, I sort of realized like it's kind of intentionally that goofy, and it's super self-aware of like how dumb it is. Yeah, it can't be, exactly. So things like bat repellent, like it's almost like a joke in a movie. Where like it's not like some error that it's like that's the joke that it's that ridiculous.
Well,
like,
it's from a generation where the idea of putting on purple underwear and gray tights and going out to fight crime is silly. Like that was the only way to approach it was as a comedy.
Yeah,
I think going into this because I haven't seen it anything Adam West in a while was that I always assumed it was a product of its time and that it was like it's a simpler era and people didn't really know. But having seen it recently, it's very clear that they knew exactly what they were doing. Like it was all intentional. Like Adam West knew he was saying stupid shit when he was like acting. Like it was all very aware, very self-aware. And I think it was the moment when they fall out and land into the foam factory convention. Like, you know, it's like to save them from dying.
It was a helicopter. So their helicopter was crashing. And very much like in the show, it's like, oh my God, how are they getting out of this one? Like, what are they going to do? And then they crash land and it's a foam rubber wholesalers convention. And they're like, oh, thank God this convention was here. And they just walk off. Cause that was a joke they used to do in the show a lot of every episode would hang on like, oh my God, how are they getting out of this one? Tune in next time. Same bad time, same bad channel. And then when it come back, they would get out of it in like 10 seconds, which is some really stupid Deus Ex Machina way out of it.
But this the Adam West Batman was also very much a product of the 60s. If you look at like the George Reeves Superman shows, like they're pretty serious. They take things pretty seriously for the most part.
You're mistaking that for the reality, which is Superman is just boring.
Well, I mean, but there were people...
God damn it, Alexa.
I mean, there were people, like, genuinely shooting at Superman and at Lois and at Jimmy. And we're in this, like, you know, whenever someone's shooting, it's usually gas of some kind. It's never actually a gun. It's some kind of just purpley, crazy purple knockout gas.
Dehydration, right?
Yeah, there was an
Are you suggesting that when they were making these, Batman had some bad drugs in his utility belt, and that's why it's so goofy? It was the 60s, and...
Well, I think just because the 60s were a time of more colorful and more, I guess, antics would be the word. Because you look at other things that were produced in the 60s, like The Prisoner. I think it was just a different time of television production.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know if you guys ever read any old Batman comics, but honestly, the show's like not that far off.
No, the Silver Age. It was silly for all those comics.
Those things were so goofy at that time. And it's actually somewhat faithful to just how like campy and bizarre those comics were.
Frank Miller hadn't showed up and just depressed everybody with his crazy xenophobic, bigoted Batman who's just out to punch dudes in the face.
I also feel like we should talk a bit about the whole bomb scene, just in the way that it oddly sort of ties in later in a odd kind of way.
Setting up the dominoes that are going to fall in the Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, who knew that Batman the movie and Dark Knight Rises would be so interconnected? Because there's this goofy scene in Batman the movie where he's got, like, Adam West is running around with a huge, like, Acme like TNT bomb,
spy versus spy bomb.
Yeah, with a fuse like right on top, just sparks flying out of it, and he's trying to throw it away, and he's running all over the place, and it's actually really funny. There's like nuns and kids and
baby ducks.
Yeah, everywhere he runs, like it was actually probably one of the moments in the movie that was genuinely like a really funny joke that that played really well. And at the end of it, then he like looks at the camera and's like, some days you can't just get rid of a bomb or something silly like that.
Yeah. Like, really dumb.
If only that was how the latest Batman ended.
Yeah,
if Batman just cuts through the fourth wall and it's like, wah, 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 wah.
Well, you know, it actually does end that way. Because when he blows up the bomb in the Adam West Batman and Robin runs out to the dock, it's Batman. He just kind of pops up from behind him. He's all, oh, I'm still alive.
Oh, yeah. Like, he pops up from the pile of, like piping or something. Like, Robin would have clearly seen him just, like, hiding
there. Oh, right. I remember that.
What I think me and Alexei would have wanted to see is in The Dark Knight Rises, Christian Bale, while flying the bat, just turns to the camera. Sometimes you can't. It's just a huge boomerang reference. It's called bookending.
Yeah.
Bookend the series.
Like, yeah, the whole thing's been super serious, and then some days you can't get rid of a mom. Yeah. Like, as he just looks at the camera.
I wish that's how it ended.
That would be fantastic. It
would have been incredible. But
the only people who got the joke.
So is there anything else about Batman that we want to talk? It's so long ago, it's hazy in my mind of exactly.
Is it like full on sketch comedy? Like, is it like 100% comedy?
Yes.
Or is
pretty
it,
much, yes. Yeah. Like, it's not in that, oh, this is so dumb, what were they thinking kind of way. Like, it's, I mean, come on. It's like Burgess Meredith is running around with this goofy hat going, rah, 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 rah.
But he's actually like, well, I know we were talking about while watching it, but that like, yeah, it's super goofy, but like the performances of Burgess Meredith and stuff are like, actually quite good considering what material they're working with. I mean, you know how like,
well, yeah.
you put the wrong actor in there and it's way more retarded than that movie actually was. You know what I mean? Like, but I mean, I didn't particularly like Catwoman in this movie. Like, she didn't play up any of the campy factor in a way.
But you didn't like her as Kitka, the Russian, you know, double agent or whatever, reporter.
Not so much.
yeah, you're right.
And like the Riddler, I mean, he was like over the top, but he did what he needed to
and
do.
And Cesar Romero, he's pretty entertaining as a Joker and stuff.
I like when they test dehydrated all their like some of their pirates, and it just cuts to the piles of like dust on the ground, and they all the villains just dive to the floor to get like their noses up into this like oh my gosh, I can't believe this actually works. And it's just so funny because they're crawling around like the piles of dust, like trying not to disturb them, but at the same time incredibly curious, because that's the whole plot of this movie, is that to you audience, that they're going to dehydrate and kidnap the members of the, is it the World Organization.
It's like the UN,
but it's not the real fake UN.
Yeah, it's the not UN. but it's literally only like seven countries. But they're gonna hold them hostage.
Actually, I like the twist they have at the end, where when they unlike transmogrify them or whatever, and then they like, rehydrate them. They all have mixed languages and stuff, and they're like, well, it looks like everything's going to turn out better than expected, because now they all have to work on understanding each other.
Right, like the villains accidentally created world peace by, like, mixing the... But that's right after the Batman and Robin use their, like, dust separator machine.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because that's another one. Like, they have all of the UN in different vials, and they're like, okay, we can't like separate these, and then whoops, like someone knocks it over, and they're like, what are we gonna do?
Mixes together.
Yeah, and literally 5 seconds later, it's them in the bat lab, like, well, thank God we have our like dust separator. Everything's fine.
It's the only true global threat that Batman has created in all the movies.
That's true. Yeah, the biggest threat. I wanted to talk about, because it's a thing that was in the show a lot, and it's actually one of my favorite things, but there's a lot of, like, Riddler riddles.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great in the show, and it's amazing in the movie. Just the, like, leaps of logic of Batman and Robin solving Riddler's riddles. They're just ridiculous. Like, the whole shark at the beginning grabbing Batman's leg and pulling on him, the leaps they go to solve this case is just insane, where they're like, oh, the shark was pulling your leg like a joke, like the Joker, and like that's the riddle. Like,
yeah,
or like it was in the sea for Catwoman? Like, it's like, Jesus Christ, like, yeah. A genius couldn't solve these insane riddles.
Which I think, I don't know if it was an actual nod to the Batman 60s era, but they, in the animated series, they had a couple Riddler episodes that did that too, where yeah. It was like, I remember like the two pennies, like he finds like at a crime scene, and he's like, two pennies, they're made of copper. Copper as in cops at this, and he's like, oh, let's go to the police station. We're like, wait, how did we
like,
get here?
There's like 35 cents of pennies, and he's like, room 35, police station. Like, what?
Yeah. Does a phone machine even dispense pennies? Like, it's quite a leap.
Riddler modded it up.
So, oh, that's true.
Just to make it work.
Yeah, you know Arkham City. He's got everything all rigged up.
Oh. Sorry. So, and there, I'm looking at my notes and just dumb things are making me laugh. Like, there was a moment where there's a torpedo coming at them, and they're like, it was another one of those like, oh no, what are we gonna do? And then the bomb goes off and the villains are like, oh, we got him. Cuts back up to Batman Robin on the buoy, and I swear to God, they say, thank God that porpoise jumped out and saved us, Robin. Like, not shown, no one saw it, like a random porpoise like did a save the president on Batman.
Yeah, like sacrificed himself.
Yeah. Like took a torpedo? Like, I don't know. I wish they'd have shown that. That would have been incredible. But yeah, it's things like that that like when I was a kid, I was like, that's dumb. But now I watch it, I'm like, oh, that's just hilarious. Like how insane that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. Well, I guess we should move right along to the next film, which is, of course, the Tim Burton Batman movie.
The best Batman movie.
The Batman movie that basically is responsible for all of this.
I'd give that to you, Matthew. I'd say best, like, all around, kind of trying to... I mean, it's, I don't know, it's between that and probably Dark Knight, I'd say.
Best or, Batman best movie one. Or best movie with Batman?
Best Batman movie.
Best Batman movie. I don't know.
Those are two different things. Two different things.
Yeah, there's a clear distinction there. And, yeah, this is the best movie that's, like, trying to accurately portray Batman as a comic book, I think.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Like, especially after all these years of watching Nolan's, like, super real world, it was cool to watch this movie and see these kind of backdrops. And it definitely felt like a real comic book kind of Batman.
And they didn't spend, like, 40 minutes on a backstory.
Oh. Wait, you're talking about Batman Begins or whatever? That's the whole point of the movie. I love the backstory.
But every time they reboot a series, they do the backstory again. It's like just like in the new Spider-Man.
What happened with Spider-Man's parents? Like, what is the deal?
All will be revealed in the story. Next
the story you haven't
trilogy.
Seen.
Yeah, this movie tells us the story without rubbing it in our faces for 20, 30 minutes. It's just a quick moment. He's remembering, and then it's done. And like it's kind of the whole plot of the movie is Vicky Vale is following him. Like he goes to the alleyway and puts some roses. Oh, why did he do that? Oh, no, his parents were murdered there. And, you know, what is it? Wonder what this would do to him, to a kid. What would it drive a kid to become? And that's so simple. I think it was just the best way to handle
into
it.
Into the story naturally rather than just being a half hour you have to sit through at the beginning. That's case you missed it, here's how Batman became Batman.
Is this the only superhero movie that actually handles it that way? Because I wish more did. Like, just like, we don't need the whole half.
Yeah.
Whole first half of the movie be just getting there.
It's definitely the only one I can think of. But, I mean, we'll obviously... just discuss and dissect Batman Begins when we get to that movie.
Superman Returns, that's an example.
Well, it's if that's like a half sequel, like, because it keeps the logic
it's
of the
continuity
first
of the first two Superman.
What about Thor? Thor, you're kind of just like, he's
that's
Thor.
True. It's
that's
like
true,
he is
yeah.
Thor.
God, why is Thor so good?
That's why. That's why
I fucking
so
love
good.
That movie.
But yeah, there's no crummy origins, just space Vikings. Go.
Absolutely. But I think what I was going to say is like, We'll discuss Batman Begins when we get to it, but I'm okay with that as an origin because that was sort of like that is the plot of the movie. The whole movie is an origin story, not just like the first several minutes. But anyway, but you're right. Like, I'm glad in this movie, I mean, it would be wasted time. I'm glad we get the time to just have Batman be Batman the whole time. It's such a great opening. Just lifts the guy up. I'm Batman. Like, all right, let's do this. Like, here we go.
And they use their origin time on the villain, which is, I think, a little more appropriate.
So good. I mean, obviously we're going to be singing Ledger's praises later, but Jack Nicholson is still
great. Or will
great.
We? I saw something on the internet that changed my
What?
My
what are you talking about?
We haven't got
let's
there.
Save it. Let's save it for
we
the
haven't gotten
when
there
we get
yet.
To that.
I was going to hold on to it.
Oh.
So Alexei's got some kind of Tom Waits
lingering
to come.
I finally caught that YouTube video that people were talking about.
Alexei, it was all part of the plan.
It's comparing him to Tom Waits or something?
It basically shows...
You got to save it for Dark Knight. Yeah. Save it for Dark Knight.
Yeah. All right.
But for what we are on now, Jack Nicholson is amazing as the Joker.
Yeah.
And I think it was interesting, like, going into the Dark Knight, like, what was that? 4 years ago? 5 years ago? But, like, how everybody saw it knew that they were going to try and redo the Joker. And I remember having conversations with people saying, there's no way they're going to be able to top Jack Nicholson.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, there's, like, it just seemed impossible. So I think there's, like, credit needs to be given to how good Nicholson is in this movie.
And his Joker fits into that universe of, like, it being a comic book where the bad guys are all, like, gangsters and the good guys are all superheroes or cops. And it's just that, like, sort of simpler time for superhero movies. And everything is cartoony and exaggerated. And
yeah.
And he's good.
Good. And we should also point out, I mean, it's easy in hindsight to say a lot of things about this movie and how it's different than the newer movies and stuff. But let's really not forget that when this movie came out, these kind of superhero movies, aside from the Superman movie, pretty much didn't exist. And the Superman movie was kind of this outlier of a superhero movie. But Batman kind of ushered in this entire wave of, like, superhero cinema.
I don't know. What was the date on the Dolph Lundgren Punisher?
Well, Batman was 89. I would imagine it was after that. But I could be wrong. But I would assume that was
the
more
Captain
like...
America where he rides a motorcycle and he's just like a dude in a...
The Captain America where he interrogates a soldier... by the side of a building yelling, tell me where it like the files or something.
Yeah.
Like, tell me where it is. Tell me where it is. And then the guy goes, it's in the,
it just dies
from being interrogated, like scared, too hard.
Scared him to death.
That's what America does.
So you're right. Yeah. Perhaps I misspoke in saying it was the first superhero movie, but the first like good superhero
this
movie.
Just in The Punisher 1989.
So. Oh, what's the release date though? Which one beat it? Which one was first?
But the Punisher is, I mean, yeah, he's a comic book superhero, but he's not really in the same wheelhouse as, like, you know, a Caped Crusader kind of superhero.
Well, what is it? I mean, what about, I mean, other than the obvious, our nation's, like, fascination with Batman and it just being a good premise, like, what do you think it was about this Batman that captured the nation? Because I think, for me, it's weird, not that I'm, like, the uber nerd or anything, but it's weird walking around Comic-Con, seeing how many average people who wouldn't usually or normally care about comics are all of a sudden really into them. And I think it's something about like the way pop culture has represented all of these properties that has just like gained the, you know, the hearts and minds of most of the world. But like, what was it about Tim Burton's Batman that captured the world audience like it did? Like, you know what I mean? Because it's not
two great tastes that taste great together. Tim Burton and his wackiness and superheroes.
Yeah. But I mean, you can only change people's minds so much about dudes running around in tights and like kicking bad guys. You know what I mean? But like this, it really did change the game. And I don't know, I just think it's a sort of a strange movie to like.
Yeah.
I
can only speak of it as a kid at that time. It's hard for me to see it outside of that because it's so intertwined with my youth. Mm-hmm. But the best I can give you is like, I mean, the cartoons in the 80s have been doing that kind of thing for a long time for kids. And to me, Batman was the first movie that felt like one of those kind of cartoons, but just was like a live action real movie.
A lot comes with kind of like the Die Hard movie. Here you take a lead actor who's usually known for kind of somewhat goofy comedies. I mean, Michael Keaton was in Night Shift and Mr. Mom. And then, you know, okay, now we're going to put him in an action movie. Well, you know, what was Bruce Willis known for at the time? He was known for Moonlighting and Blind Date. I mean, he was a comedian. So they take a chance kind of hoping that formula, because, you know, Burton had worked with Keaton before on Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so, but that Michael Keaton's not a huge star, so we need star power. So you bring in Nat Nicholson, who at that time had, what, at least 2 Academy Awards under his belt, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say he was a big movie star.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And you cast him as a character that I've never seen him play before. Like, this really over-the-top, psychotic, crazy man. I mean, it was perfect. And, you know, the rest of the characters are interesting. Like, Vicki Vale, I could take or leave her, but Robert Wool as Knox, he was great. Like,
oh, yeah.
With little witty comebacks and lines, and he's always smiling. Because Robert Wool, I love him. I think he's really fun.
That was during the marathon. That was one of the things that really stuck out to me as like him and his character in that movie to me is one of the like unsung cool things in that movie. Cause it's so easily overlooked. Like, cause you got fucking Joker and Batman and all and Vicky Vale and all this crazy shit going on, but he's genuinely funny in that movie, especially the stuff where they're at like Wayne Manor and you know, he's just like, talking shit about all the
what
armor
kind of
and
pussy
stuff.
Keeps all these swords and stuff.
Yeah, he's like, oh, who's this? King of the Wicker people? Like, just, you know, he's constantly kind of cracking wise, and he's really good in the movie.
Well, it's like, it's a movie that is close to being a cartoon, but it feels like it was made by and for adults also. So when you're a kid, it's really empowering because you're like, I'm kind of grown up because this movie is very dark and grown up, but at the same time, it's fucking Batman, and it's exaggerated and cartoony and fun. So it had, like, both of those. I think it's really hard to do, and Tim Burton is, like, the guy to do that.
Well, it also could be, I'm thinking now that, I mean, I guess Burton's been doing it for 20 years now. I mean, I'm obviously not too happy with him as of late, but Alice in Wonderland became one of the highest grossing movies ever, and I don't think that's necessarily because people cared about it that much, but just because the children's movie market has a tendency to dominate box office, like movies that most adults wouldn't give a shit
kids
about.
Kids don't have great taste, believe it or not.
Yeah, that, you know, but I mean, it just happened to be that this is actually quite a good movie. But I mean, sort of clicking in my brain that like the 80s was the children's decade. I mean, from Saturday morning cartoons to toy, everything
Goonies
was
Goonies.
It was all marketed towards us, and the people paying the money and bringing us to the theaters were our parents. So like, if Batman's huge with the kids across the world, then the parents will be too, I guess. I mean.
Well,
that's the only
I
way
think Alexei is right, and it hits that sweet spot of good for the kids, but the adults really like it's just a good ass movie.
I mean, that's what Tim Burton does. Yeah. You know, he's a grown man who's got a sad little boy trapped inside of him, so he's able to do both those things. And he's a great artist, and his team, he assembles amazing production teams for these movies. I mean, it looked fantastic.
But are we saying that this Batman was intended for young audiences? I don't know if I believe like kid audiences.
I'm sure there were toys in the stores by the time the movie
well,
came
absolutely,
out.
Absolutely there were toys, but there were toys for aliens. I mean, that's not a kid's movie.
Well, to me, that's one of the cool things about the Tim Burton Batman movies is it's like, yeah, it's for kids, but you also get this underlying feeling of like, is it really? Like, this is it definitely flirts in these kind of ways of being a little more adult themed or a little more like, it's almost like you feel like you're staying up late and watching something you shouldn't be watching or something.
And I get that, but I mean, I didn't see this movie in the theater. You know, my parents didn't take me.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude.
I would have flipped out. I mean, I was 8 when it came out.
I was scared.
Yeah, Dan, do you have? I have a vivid memory, and I don't know if you remember.
I ran out of the theater.
Well, here, this is my memory.
I was afraid of Batman.
Yeah, like, yeah, Dan. But so, yeah, when we saw the movie, I remember the main title credits where it was the camera was floating through the bat symbol.
Yeah, I remember.
Dan
that.
Was like scared of like the bat symbol.
Yeah, I was scared of the symbol. Of Batman.
Yeah. Because I think it was because it was clearly had this dark tone and it looked like a, you know, cave or something.
Yeah,
like,
I was okay. I was a little like, I don't know what this is. And then when he dropped on that guy, I was like, I'm Batman. I was like, I gotta get out of here. And I ran out of the theater.
Yeah.
And so my dad had to bring me back in.
But that, I mean, that makes sense because you were
dad. You're going to watch this.
Well, yeah, also, like, Dan was incredibly young. I mean, you were like, you know, like 7 or 8 or something like that. Like,
no, I mean, well, let's see. I was 5. Yeah.
Oh, 5. Yes. Right. Because I was doing the math like it was 91, but it was 89. That's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was scary. No, but, I don't know. I mean, if your question was like, you know, walking on comic book conventions or whatever, and everybody likes Batman or it's this mass appeal, it's probably just like, maybe it has a lot to do with like the like just Batman's an icon. I don't know why. You know, I don't know what makes him an icon where like Green Lantern is not an icon. I don't know. But something about like this movie, I think,
because he doesn't use fucking green ring baseball
like
gloves.
A big like, well, exactly. Yeah, because he's Batman's the coolest. Because he's the coolest superhero. Like, I mean, this movie, I think the Tim Burton, the first Batman movie, brings out the like the most iconography of Batman probably in everybody's mind. Like the bat symbol and like, I'm Batman. And like, you know, where do they get a load of me? And like all that, you know, like anything that's Batman in the culture is probably from this.
Yeah. Movie. The well, Joker and his mirror and like, you know.
Well, we had actually talked about it. I don't know if it was just before you came in. I think it was. But that actually for most of us, actually the most iconography related element of Batman is the animated series for us. That when someone says Batman to me, I actually don't picture Keaton.
Oh, that's
interesting. I picture the Batman the Animated Series.
Well, but the Animated Series was taking so many cues from this.
Yeah. No, I know.
They're very much intertwined.
But it's for me, it overshadowed it. It's just the best representation.
Well, it might also be that there's like 50 episodes, you know, and you spent months of your life watching it every day. And since then, you know, like when you're going to go back and watch Batman, like I go back and I watch the Tim Burton Batman movies and it's like, that's 3 hours. And then I go back and I watch the animated series and that's like a week.
Yeah.
But if you're like thinking of like what's like the Jungian idea of Batman, like what, you know, it wouldn't be encapsulated in any version of it. Just what is like, you know,
yeah, it's a dark silhouette.
When people say Batman, what do you think? Like it's probably most people would do the 1989 movie.
And because there's so much texture there, you know, like when you think of Batman, you think of that, like the carapace, you know, that like hard in that it's always like a rubber looking suit that he wears and the mask and the ears and the cape and all of those. There's so much texture in the real living world of the Batman.
Actually, I think we can all agree that the look of Batman is probably the best in the Burton Batman in terms of the suit. And the cowl.
So.
And
well, actually, I think I think more specifically, it was Batman Returns. We decided that it was perfected.
It's a modified version of it. Yeah.
Because the cape, I mean, the cowl in Batman Returns is one of the nicest designs I've ever seen in any comics, anything. It's like the silhouette of that is like was perfected in that movie.
Yeah. And also, I think Batman has an appeal to people beyond other superheroes in that it's just a guy. Like, there's something about that, like, if you had the gumption and a bajillion dollars, like, you could be this guy, too. Like,
anybody can be Batman.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we people admire Superman, admire all these other superheroes, but they have something we don't have. They have superpowers.
Listen, Superman's an alien. He's not even American.
Oh, he's American. He's just
he's American. Listen, biscuits and gravy. You shut your fucking mouth.
I want to see his citizenship.
Where's his birth certificate? Where's Superman's birth certificate? I don't know where it is.
I thought it was kind of interesting that this is the only movie where he just overtly just murders people.
That's a good point.
Like Batman in the comic. Batman in the comic has a real stiff no guns line, and they even stick to that to an annoying point in the Nolan universe, except for one glaring omission of a scene that we'll get into, but he just fucking murders people in these two movies.
Yeah, he like blows up buildings full of henchmen. Just explodes them.
He drops like 50 fools down all sorts of heights.
He straps bombs to people. He straps bombs to people that explode.
Yeah, doesn't he roll into the chemical plant and just oozy everyone and it leaves it like a pile of dust?
Yeah, but this one also doesn't. This one doesn't feel very real. So it's almost it happens so fast.
Right.
It's like Star Wars deaths.
Yes. It's like stormtroopers.
Like video game. Like you killed that guy. He flashed. He disappeared. But like it's not like you saw his kids like crying afterwards or something.
No. Well, but to me, I find it interesting that like this happens to be one of the most entertaining movies because. Like, as much as Nolan, and I'm not trying to say anything against Nolan in general, because I actually love him as a director, but, like, everything that he's been lauded for in the new series, which is, like, bringing realism and grittiness, like, it doesn't necessarily make a better movie. Because, like, the Batman 89, like, I'd rather sit down and watch that than I would Batman Begins or, like, The Dark Knight Rises. You know what I mean? Like, Batman murdering people, the moral dilemma he goes through in the final three films isn't as important to me as, like, him rolling through in the Batmobile and looking badass. like, in the end, like...
I think it's also important to remember that this is the first mass market Batman. So, you know, up until now, you had literally dozens of different interpretations, or up until that 89 Batman, of who Batman was based on different writers and artists approaching it. But once Michael Keaton was Tim Burton's Batman, that's become the sort of, now Batman is just a variation on this. Like, that became the new starting point for most people. So, it's a lot harder to focus on the nitpicking bullshit in that movie because you're just like, wow, I just discovered this whole new concept of like this guy and this really badass suit and the car and the everything, the Joker and all that stuff. And then you're moving on from there. So now we can nitpick like, well, this compared to this and this compared to that.
Because before that movie, it was just bow whiff.
Yeah.
Pant.
Before
like,
that, Batman
Adam
was
West,
one
like...
of another. You know, he was a popular comic book character.
Part of the Super Friends.
Yeah, he was part of the Justice League. You know, he was a superhero. But at that point, that movie hit. And then, like, millions of people across the planet all agreed, Batman is this. This is Batman.
Yeah, which I think it's a testament and a compliment to this movie is that having gone through the realism and grittiness of the Nolan universe, that this still holds up.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think it's just a product of... having grown up with it. It's just a really entertaining movie. I don't know. I like it. I think it's the best Batman movie.
That's a good point. I'd still, we'll get to it. I'll personally give the best to Dark Knight just because, like, Jesus fucking Christ, that movie's good. But yeah, like, I give this a very close number two for me.
Well, yeah, I think we'll find probably that there will be other people that say this. I actually think that the best Batman movie is Batman from Tim Burton, but then the best movie with Batman in it is The Dark Knight.
Right. Yeah, now, that's that. A good, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You're Daniel not really watching The Dark Knight for Batman. You're watching it for Tom.
What are you
talking
about? All the
Heath Ledger.
Tom Wet. I mean, so wait, but I have one question about the Tim Burton Batman. Does he return?
Yes.
It's funny you should ask.
But when did he leave?
Yeah, it's not like Batman went anywhere. Like
he left theaters for about 3 years.
He returns to theaters.
The movie does end with Lieutenant Gordon or Commissioner Gordon, who's such an important character in the Tim Burton Batman movies.
Hey, Pat Hingle is awesome.
Slamming an axe into that bat signal.
He gave us a signal. So yeah, of course, the next movie we should talk about, Batman Returns. Back at it.
Starting off with two Tim Burton former co-stars right at the beginning.
Yeah, that opening stuff is great with Pee-wee and, and who's the other one?
The girl who played like Sloan or Simone, the girl that Pee-wee meets at the two dinosaurs.
Oh, she's from like Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she's the one who wants to go to France. They both play Paul Rubens and the name, well, unfortunately, the woman's name is escaping me, but they play the Penguin's parents, the Cobblepots.
Yeah.
So it was really funny to see them.
Diane Salinger.
Ah, there it is.
Yeah, I love Batman Returns a lot because, like we said, I mean, Batman's all about Batman and the Joker. Like, I actually probably like the Joker more than Batman in the first Batman movie, and it kind of goes the same for this movie, too. Of like, I always seem to like the villains way more than Batman, and the villains in this movie are awesome. Like, Catwoman and the Penguin are great, especially Catwoman. Holy shit, is incredibly amazing in that movie. I love it. Just every second of Michelle Pfeiffer doing Catwoman stuff is, to me, the best part of it.
The crazy balls to put her in that outfit and let her do this super psychosexual stuff she gets up to, where she's like licking her paw and wiping her face.
For the children, for the kids.
Yeah. Soup and like spooning Penguin on like a dirty bed in a rundown building.
Oh, he straight up like walks in and is like, that's just the pussy I was looking for. Like there is just no subtlety at all about it. Which I love.
Well, this movie also has a third villain played by Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah. Max Schreck. Yeah, the original Schreck.
Yeah. Because what's great about this is, like, the Penguin has his evil plan, but he gets sidetracked by Schreck's evil plan, which I think was a really kind of a cool twist for a villain story. Like, you know, the Penguin, as we see, like, his plan was to kidnap all the firstborn sons and kill them. That was his plan.
Yeah, he was like, real biblical with his revenge plot. It's kind of crazy.
But Schreck convinces him to run for mayor. And Penguin actually gets into it. He gets into he starts to buy his own Kool-Aid, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's like, oh, I can be the mayor. I can dress up fancy. And people are respecting me now. You know, they don't see me as a monster. Or, you know, this is how I'll get control. But then, you know, Batman turns the tables with his sweet CD DJing.
Yeah, that was fucking ridiculous. Like, Dan, I don't know how long it's been since you've seen Batman Returns, but...
It's been a while since I've seen Batman Returns.
There's a ridiculous part where... It's actually a trope that's in a lot of movies where he's playing back. Like, he has audio of the Penguin. Saying like awful shit.
Oh,
about
and then
Gotham.
He remixes it, like, to be funny. Yeah,
so
I
the Penguin's giving a speech, and then he's playing like, you know, Gotham's a piece of shit town. I'm gonna shit all over it. Or I mean,
it's like the UHF moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, afterwards, Wayne just like DJs the CD he's playing like on a CD with
he's in the
Batcave
doing
it. And it's on a bat symbol, and we all just were like, "What the fuck?" Like, because it was
you
so
do that with a CD.
Music by Prince. Know. In the second one as well?
Oh, no way. The second
one
wasn't.
Prince was in the first one. Yeah, which if anything dates the first Batman movie, I would think the Prince music does. I mean, I love it, but yeah.
Well, there's a part in Dark Knight where the Black Eyed Peas do a whole song, right?
Joker puts on the boombox and dances around.
Yeah.
We should talk about Danny DeVito, though, as the Penguin, because obviously Michelle Pfeiffer is good, and I think he's really good, too.
Perfect casting.
Yeah.
It's funny how it precedes the new Batman movies by sharing that, like, the evil villain is so goddamn evil that he ignores the fact that, like, the real villains are in politics and finance, and he's just like, I'm gonna murder all the kids! And then somebody's like, hey, you know, if you invest properly, you can put some time in, and then you can, like, actually take over Gotham.
I just get the impression that when they did the makeup and effects for the Penguin, that they, like, really didn't have to do that much. It's like, okay, give him some flipper hands and long nose and, like...
It's the outfit. It's that onesie, dirty, nasty, stainy...
It's like, yeah, the thing... It's like the clothes he was in his carriage, like, he was worn for his whole life or something.
And they consistently feed him, like, black jelly beans.
Yeah, he's constantly, like, oozing, like, foul, like, filth, like, out of his mouth. And, like, actually, the teeth were the most impressive, I think.
Yeah, was he bleeding internally the entire movie? Like,
yeah,
why
basically.
What's all this black
gangrenous, like...
The costuming in the Burton movies are, I think, the best of any
absolutely
of the Batman movies for the villains and for Batman.
Batman and Robin.
Riddler costumes are so amazing. It's definitely impressive costuming and set designing and everything in the Tim Burton movies. I'm probably most impressed with. I'll give you that.
There's that one amazing shot. I know we talk a lot over these movies, and so I don't know how many of you guys notice it. When we see the zoo for the first time, when Max Schreck was kidnapped,
yeah,
it does this camera movement through all these miniatures, and it's going like through miniatures, like it's going underneath arches, and the camera just keeps going. And I was just like, how the hell are they doing this with a model? Because it must have either been a huge model and a combination of a huge model and a tiny camera. But it just looked so amazing when it did it.
Yeah, you have to imagine those sets they used on, like, Nightmare Before Christmas or something 5 minutes later. Like, they repurposed them. Because that's kind of what it looked like. It looked like going through Halloween Town or something.
Well, he'd been doing that stuff. I mean, Beetlejuice did that. There's a lot of miniatures. And Tim Burton, yeah, that's what he does. He puts stop motion into his stuff. He
plugs
animates
it all into a computer and hits render and walks away.
Well, now he does.
I really enjoy the use of the Penguin umbrellas, and because that's kind of like his gadgets are his umbrellas. You know, he's got the umbrella helicopter, which is like, oh man, that's awesome.
I like the hypnotism one. Yeah, the fake like it's a dumb joke, but it's like it's just meant to give you a splitting headache. Like he thinks it's gonna hypnotize him.
But when the Penguin comes back, like after the last scene when like Catwoman and Shrek, you know, battle kiss. I guess. And Penguin's sneaking up behind him and he grabs an umbrella and it's like, oh no, he's going to get Batman. And he pulls out the umbrella with the mobile umbrella. He's like, ah, I grabbed the cute one.
There's actually that whole scene's really cool after he, because there's like Emperor Penguins that are like his pallbearers, like dragging him into
I have met one.
Oh, right. Because you actually know there was little people, like, in the suits or whatever.
Yeah. She's also most famously known as the midget stripper in the original Total Recall. Midget hooker, sorry.
Yeah.
What do they call her? Thumbelina?
Thumbelina, yeah.
With the machine gun and
stuff. She's a real nice lady, I'll tell you.
I like Catwoman's story. I love her her going from nerdiness to Catwoman.
Oh, yeah. Wielding that whip, too. Yeah. Like, talk about scary. Like, she's dark and badass, and we never see Catwoman like that. Like, not in the comics that I've read, not in the cartoon, not in the new movies. Like, her Catwoman is just, like, the most batshit crazy, suicidal, vindictive, cat shit crazy. Yeah. Hot as fuck.
I think my favorite scene in the entire movie is when she comes back and starts making the Catwoman suit. Like, there's just her rampage in her, like, pink apartment of like, putting stuffed animals down the garbage disposal and killing them.
And the hello there neon sign turning into hell here.
Well, I mean, it's like her apartment is like the last innocent place in all of Gotham. Gotham's like a dirty, gritty, underbelly of girders and then all of a sudden you come into this pink apartment full of stuffed animals and cute little cats that she's feeding saucers of milk. It's like, oh, this is so cute.
But this movie just stepped up the design too. Like, her apartment was crazy. Like, you never really saw a lot of locations in the first one, but this one clearly the budget was out of control, because you got Penguin's lair with all those penguins with rockets and his yellow ducky, like, all-wheel drive, whatever the hell that is.
And that made it into the animated series too, which I loved.
Yeah, but there's just so much more stuff. There's that whole parade and the floats. And
one of my few complaints in the movie is that I love that Penguin has a bunch of actual penguins that are his minions. That's, I think, amazing.
But then why clown?
But yeah, the rest of the crew just feels way more like Joker guys to me.
I think that's just Tim Burton's whole carnival. Like, carnivals are his shtick.
Yeah.
You know, like Beetlejuice turns into a carnival over and over again for no real reason.
Although I do like the monkey grinder, like, Gatling gun guy. That's pretty good.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, too, with, like, Penguin maybe being part of a freak show kind of.
Yeah.
He's like a sideshow kind of thing. So hooking up with this other group of people who are sideshow freaks and things like that, it's a pretty good fit.
Yeah, I almost wish he went a little more freaky with them. Like, yeah. they don't. I mean, I guess it's a kid's movie. You can't go crazy. But I think of the end of, like, the movie Freaks. Like, that shit's terrifying.
Yeah, you can only have him bite somebody's face off. You don't want to be too scary.
Yeah, but I guess that's true.
But you know, it reminded me a lot of the Adam West Batman movie where the Penguin's henchmen were pirates.
That's true.
It's just like he doesn't really have a group of henchmen that fit him. So he just grabs whoever's. Wants to ever hang out with a bad guy and do bad guy stuff.
John, would you have been more pacified if they had seeked to explain it by saying, oh, these were like followers of the Jokers and he had been martyred or something, and then he teamed up with Penguin? Like, you linked the two movies together. They're like Joker copycats.
The Joker didn't have clones, though.
Well, I know, but this would be after his death. It's like people, they could have been like Joker.
Martyr cult.
Yeah, martyr cult of copycat Joker clowns.
Well, I guess, you know, they wouldn't want to call attention to the fact that he's like lesser than the Joker, though, because that would be unfortunate.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
They actually had that concept in the Batman Beyond series. There was a group of gang called the Jokers.
Return of the Joker?
Well, I mean,
before that, there was just...
Yeah, there was just like the Jokers.
Hooligans that dress up like Jokers.
Yeah. Well, I imagine that would have been... Dark Knight Rises had Heath Ledger been around to be in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because everything I heard about it was that, like, at early stages, it was going to include his trial and all the shenanigans involved in that.
Yeah, it's too, you know, it's unfortunate he was lost to us, because that would have been, of course, amazing. But...
Well, we could have just gotten, there's like a kind of a pretty old singer with a gravelly voice who could probably fill it in.
You could do every other scene with a different actor. Get Colin Farrell in there, some Jude Law. Come on.
What's the name of that Gillian movie?
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
They gave all that money that they would have made to her, to his family. I fully support that decision.
Yeah, I actually really like Terry Gilliam. I'm glad they did that as well. But you know.
All right, so we all agree. Does everybody love Batman Returns? Does anybody
have
any
problems?
Yeah,
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah, I have very little to complain. Great. I feel like it gets a bum rap from people that it's like not as good or not that great. I think it's an awesome sequel.
For some reason, as a kid, I didn't like it a lot, but like, going back and watching it, I don't really know what my problems with it were.
I think it might be a little serious. Like, even though it looks cartoonier, it's dark, and it's really just about different people being outcasted and...
It's a political thriller, like, in some ways, like, you know, I mean, in the goofiest possible way, but to little kids, they don't care about Penguin running for mayor. Like,
and there's like a lot of Penguin from what I remember. I remember seeing as a kid and just being like, oh, gross. I don't know about this.
Gross and scary. And Catwoman is really fucking depressing and depressed. And Shrek is even scary.
German translation of the word Shrek is terror or fear. Oh, there you go.
There you go. Oh.
We all assumed he was named after the actor that played Nosferatu, right? Because it was Max Shrek, right?
That's definitely.
Oh, is it really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he looks like a fucking vampire.
Wow. I never even knew that. So the guy that played Nosferatu is called Max Shrek.
Yeah, that's
so.
The actor's name.
Oh, okay.
Name.
So it's this obvious like homage to that. Oh, that's cool.
And Tim Burton, you know, he loves his classic horror.
Oh, that makes a ton of sense. That's cool. Now, when you were talking about Catwoman and stuff, it made me think of one of my favorite scenes in the movie is them sort of making out with each other and like hiding their scars and this. I something about that romance I really liked. Like any other Batman movie, any kind of romance, like fucking Rachel Dawes or Vicky Vale, all this stuff, like, I just kind of take it with a grain of salt.
Dr. Chase Meridian.
Yeah.
John.
Like, all of those, I think, are not that great. They feel very tacked on just for, like, we need a love story. But the Catwoman-Batman love story in Batman Returns is, to me, the best one of, like, I actually feel it. I like how he's, like, turned on by how fucking crazy and fucked up she is. And it fits in well with the movie. Like, it doesn't feel tacked on. So, there you go. So, the next movie that we're going to go over is Mask of the Phantasm. I'm very glad we watched Mask of the Phantasm because it was cool. Like, I love that show, and it was a great, almost like two-parter episode of that show. It was really cool to put it in there, and it helped kind of like mix it up and change the pace of it. It definitely rejuvenated me.
And it showed us an aspect of Batman that we've never seen. We've seen his origin as a child, and we've seen him as Batman, but we've never seen, until like the Nolan movie, we've never seen that progression of him becoming Batman and the decisions and like that he's making to do it.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten that half the movie is like a Batman origin movie.
It's probably the most human, normal portrayal of Batman of all of the movies. Like, it makes him be a normal person with normal relationships and who grows up and spends a fair amount of time on screen as Bruce Wayne not being awful.
Yeah. Well, the Bruce Wayne in the animated show does seem the most grounded to me. Of like, he seems level-headed. He doesn't seem like he's like on the edge of madness or anything.
Yeah.
There's a really cool bit I like in the movie that, because I guess the whole plot is the Phantasm is like killing off all these gangsters one by one, and he's trying to figure out why. And I like that it ties back into this backstory of how Batman got started. And like, there's this whole sequence of him donning a ski mask, and he's like going out and crime fighting before he's actually Batman. It kind of reminded me of this stuff in like Spider-Man where he's, you know, doing crime fighting stuff, but like isn't fully have his costume yet. And there was really cool sequences of him just fighting criminals. And I remember there's this bit where like a motorcycle's like coming head on at him, and he jumps up and like drop kicks a guy off the motorcycle.
Yeah. It's kind of like Akira for a second.
Yeah. It was really awesome.
Dudes on motorcycles. Well, the TV show had a lot of episodes. Well, not a lot, but it had numerous episodes that dealt with the different parts of Batman's history that are responsible for his various talents. And that's always nice because, like, oh, he actually trained in karate, so, you know, that's how you know he can fight.
Right.
And all of these other aspects, he trained with a magician, so he's actually an escapist. And there's all of these different aspects that in the cartoon show you get to see, and they find their way into Mask of the Phantasm, so you get a better picture of Bruce Wayne.
Now, was the show over and then they made a movie, or was it made during the show?
Mid-series.
Yeah, it was midway through. And it was supposed to be small, but the show was doing so well that they just dumped a bunch of money on them and said, like, make this movie theatrical. I don't think it was supposed to be theatrical.
Was it supposed to be like direct-to-video or something?
It felt like a long episode.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be a straight-to-video, and based on the success of the franchise at that point, they took a couple extra million dollars and put it into the animation and put it out.
Because it's only like 71 minutes long or something.
Yeah, it's
so,
not too.
Yeah, you can tell you could just extend it a bit and it would get there. There was also a really interesting plot point that they didn't dive all the way into, but it was a neat little nod that the Joker sort of played into the whole backstory. And they basically outright say that he was like one of these gangsters that the Phantasm is like out for vengeance for.
And that connects to the Tim Burton Batman.
Yeah.
Which
that's with the devil in the pale moonlight.
Totally. But I like that the cartoon never really, it doesn't outright say like, this is how he became the Joker. I guess you're right. I guess I didn't even think of that, but I guess the show is sort of just keeping the canon of the like Burton movie, and that's how the Joker happened.
Down to where how he puts his roses down on the site of his parents' death.
But and what'd you guys think about the whole twist of like who the Phantasm was and all that? Did anyone
I liked it, but I still want to know how the power worked.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of like disappearing, reappearing bullets going through her stuff.
Yeah.
It made no sense. They never explained it.
It makes as much sense as how Batman disappears when you turn around for like 2 seconds.
But we get to see that. Like we mentally know, oh, he's got a grapple And
you never hear the grapple. You know,
they literally shot at her, and the bullets just went through her. And I was like,
no, it went through the smoke around her, you guys, because she's.
Because she's what, ducking her in the smoke, and then how she was able to vanish from the expo with the Joker in tow and make it out of the explosion radius, which Batman barely did on foot by himself. So it's like, I guess we're supposed to assume that she has some kind of magical power or some kind
I think it's just one of those things.
Technology.
Yeah, like there's
a hole. It's just a hole in the script covered by smoke.
It's a cartoon movie.
Well, it's all we see is smoke. I'm sure I'm glad the movie doesn't waste time with like, oh, here's all her ropes and how she did it. Like it's a Scooby-Doo episode or something. Like I'm glad it's just like, okay.
It goes a little more supernatural than I would have expected considering the story they were trying to tell. It does irk you a little bit. You're like, wait, she should be bleeding right now. But like, ultimately, it doesn't like ruin the story or anything.
It doesn't ruin it. It's just it's one of the only flaws that I can think of. Yeah. It's a nitpicky thing.
Yeah. Well, that's that superhero logic that like superheroes only fall in love with other superheroes. And even though he falls in love with her when she's still a pedestrian or whatever, a non-combatant, eventually she becomes a superhero because that's just how it works.
What weapon store did she patron to get the like hand blade thing? Because I want one of those,
that's
man.
Custom.
There's a booth at Comic-Con where you can buy all your custom knives.
Didn't you see Seven? There's like people who make that stuff.
Man, you want to talk about movies that fucking scared me when I was a child in the theater? I don't know how or why I ended up in Seven with my dad, but I walked out of that thing, just my world like shaking.
He made me do it! He made me!
Jesus, God, like try being in like junior high and seeing Seven. Like, man.
I was in like, must have been sixth grade, I think.
I also feel that this is our only chance to touch on this, but we get to touch on our third incarnation of the Joker, which is Mark Hamill.
That's true.
Which is another very different style Joker. I love that voice. That to me is the voice of the Joker.
I think that's the best comic Joker. Like everything else has to be somewhat more realistic or in some way, shape or form, because when it's on celluloid, when it's actually somebody standing there trying to be a Joker, you can't do a lot of the really goofy stuff that he does in the comics. But in the animated series, they really do a good job of just taking that like almost unbeatable, just no matter what happens, he's always having a good time and enjoying things. And you are falling into some sort of trap like feeling that he has.
Yeah, everything is a trap. Like, he's always got a plan, which is fun.
Yeah, I love Mark Hamill as the Joker. I think he does a really, really good job doing it. He's great. He rides this, and I don't know if this is just a quality of voice actors, but he rides this amazing line between that kind of goofy Joker that we're talking about of being really silly and genuinely funny.
And likable.
Yeah, and likable, and then turning it into being, like, kind of terrifying. Like, he can really have that quality to his voice where it gets kind of scary.
So it's kind of like the Joker from the Batman movie, the first one. And
Cesar Romero.
Combined with Heath Ledger, like you know, like those kind of.
Yeah.
If you took those two, you would get the Joker from the animated.
Yeah, series. Like middle of it. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And Mark Hamill's Joker didn't just have a Joker voice. Like he had times where he was angry, times where he was laughing, times where he was mad. And his voice changed to match that tone, but still stayed within that. So it was like a whole other person was playing him, not like someone was doing multiple voices, which was another thing I want to talk about in a moment with Kevin Conroy. But that's what made him just believable as a person, like that he could have a normal voice. He could have his Joker crazy voice and his angry voice.
Yeah, he has like the clown voice, like the tee-hee kind of like having a good time voice. But then also he can take a real devilish turn without actually sounding like really that different. It's just like the way, I don't know. It's really well done. Well executed. I agree with you. Yeah.
But Kevin Conroy, from what I've read and what I believe in my heart, is the first actor to actually use a different voice for Batman from Bruce Wayne. Like a very distinctive, even in the animated series, when he was Batman or as Bruce Wayne in the Batcave, his voice was like very deeper. And when he was Bruce Wayne, his voice was much higher. And that helped to, I think, secure his identity better. Obviously from Adam West, not saying that he was so worried about it in the Adam West one, but even Michael Keaton
didn't really when he has attendants waiting on his helicopter, you know, I don't think he cares that much about his identity.
But Michael Keaton did, as Batman, did very little to disguise his voice. He just kind of spoke normally, or maybe a little bit softer, but there wasn't a clear distinction as there was in the animated series.
Yeah. There's also a, just to sort of wrap it up, there's a bit towards the end that I really like where they're at like some World's Fair or something like that, and the Joker and Batman are fighting in a model of Gotham City.
Yeah.
And it was straight, it was literally just straight out of like a Godzilla movie.
Like the kaiju movie, yeah.
Yeah.
As a kid, I was watching that and being like, it's my two best, my favoritest things ever on screen in front of me right now. It's great.
Yeah.
And Josh, you noticed something, because the anime series always had a lot of touches on the larger character world of Batman. And you noticed something at the World's Fair.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's like this big sculpture of a guy, and it's the Anti-Monitor from the DC Comics, like the antagonist of the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
He was just in there. Like it looked all, I mean, it was slightly different, but it was the Anti-Monitor just standing there. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice to know that the people who are making these superhero things actually are fans of the genre that they're working in to make a dollar as well.
What are you saying, Tim Burton saying that he would never read a Batman comic wasn't your favorite perspective how to make movies?
I mean, I appreciate that Tim Burton got to bring a unique take to it because he clearly, well, everything I know about it is that he's not really a Batman fan. But it's nice to know that the people like doing the day-to-day design work on a show like that, you know, there's some comic book fans in there.
Yeah, whether or not he's a Batman fan or not, and I don't know if this is just to sell copies or something, but I know in my copy of the Killing Joke, there's like a pull quote from Tim Burton on it about like when I was making the Batman movie, I read this one a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the dude is a workaholic, you know, like yeah. I don't know if he was a kid who read Batman comics or whatever.
Fuck him. What a bunch of bullshit. Did you guys have anything else about Mask of the Phantasm?
I do think it's cool that it's a movie where Batman exists and people know who his identity is and he's just kind of cool with it. Because that's not the case until you get to the last movie, this marathon, where it seems like every fucking person on the planet knows who Batman is and nobody, it doesn't. It's like, yeah, this whole thing we've been nurturing about it being a secret identity and I got these two voices. It's just like all through just into the fucking dumpster by the end of this new Batman.
Jeez.
But Master right. of Phantasm, it's
sneak,
like
things peek. Come to an end sometimes.
His fiance is out there, you know? It's like there are people that know who Batman is, and that's fine.
All right, that's going to do it for part one of the Batman Cinemarathon. Many, many more movies to discuss. We'll be back in August, where we'll post parts 2 and 3. Until then, you should check out our new website, which is cinemarathonpodcast.com. Alexei designed a brand new look for it, and there's many more things to check out there, including archives of previous episodes and links to videos that we've done. So be sure to check that out at cinemarathonpodcast.com. And if you have any questions or comments or would like to suggest future marathons, please email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. And also, when we were doing the Batman Marathon, we live tweeted our reactions to that. So you could follow that at our Twitter account, which is cinemarathonpod. That's cinemarathonPOD. And also, if you have a moment, it'd be great if you could like us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/cinemarathon. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you back at part 2 for more Batman. Have a good one.